questions.
Send your question. Hello again, by the way. And send your questions, or your schmestions, indeed, to correspondence@curbandamayor.com.
And they'll be redacted from my portion of the script.
Yes. Peggy in Glasgow, what's the closest you've ever come to being cancelled?
Ooh.
Well, I think I'm
pretty certain that I will have been cancelled by a lot. Well, I'll tell you, it's the old hard left, of which I was once a member,
comrade,
who now consider me to be completely persona non grata. And it's usually, because I've come off Twitter because Elon Musk is an idiot. But there was a large time in which there's almost nobody more sanctimonious than the British hard left. God bless them. And he should be left now. And it were often the sort of those people. I think I've been thoroughly cancelled by them. But I have no problem with that at all.
I mean, the only thing I can think of vaguely, Peggy in Glasgow, and thank you for your question, would be this week I did.
You were cancelled this week?
No, well, I was still on Twitter because I am. And
come off it.
No, and I just made a comment about the Mariana Spring series on BBC Sound.
Which is terrific. Mariana in Conspiracy Land.
That's right.
I listened to it because you recommended it, and I binged the entire series. It's great.
So I just tweeted, "This is a must listen," from the fearless Mariana Spring, because I do think she's very good,
yeah.
And I hear nothing but good things about what a lovely person she is. And the first six comments, well, yeah, absolutely, you're right, you know.
Yeah.
And then the idiots.
Oh, then the barrage of
arrived. None of whom followed me. Obviously, word got round, so they thought no, and they just messaged me saying, you know, no, she's an agent for the British government. All that kind of lunacy.
Yeah. Well, can I be cancelled by them as well? If any of them are listening, I love that series too. Please cancel me, you bunch of Burks.
And the thing, you know, never. So I don't get engaged in the thing. I just say, hey, this is a thing. Why don't you listen to it?
My favorite one of those, because conspiracy theorists, wing nuts, you know, lunatics, all of whom are a hop, skip, and a jump away from, you know. I mean, one of the terrifying things about that series that you just mentioned is how
Mariana
in Conspiracy Land is how basically crystal gazing hippies turn into hardline right wingers almost overnight as a result of poisonous conspiracy theories. And if any of you are listening, they are poisonous conspiracy theories and you are right-wing nuts and you should be ashamed of yourself. That there was a thing called Loose Change, and it was a documentary about how 9/11 was a set-up job, and, you know, one of the flights that was meant to have been destroyed didn't. It landed and everyone got off. And somebody sent me a copy of this, and I was writing a piece for a newspaper about how, you know, conspiracy theories are always to do with the fact that people would much rather believe that there was some kind of organized conspiracy than just believe that chaotic things happen in the world because chaotic things happen in the world. If you look at the way governments work, that's the truth. Anyway, so I wrote a thing saying, these people saying all this shit. People say, oh, the Twin Towers came down faster than gravity. No, they didn't. Yeah, they did. Look at the evidence. Yeah, the evidence, they didn't. It wasn't an inside job. Thank you very much. And if you think it is, you're a right-wing nut. You should be ashamed of yourself. But after the piece came out, I got a note from some of the people involved in making the film, and it said, "Dear Mark, just wanted to say that we understand that because of the right-wing media, because of the media, you can't say what you actually thought. But reading between the lines, we understood what you were saying, and thank you."
There is an... Very revealing.
Very revealing.
On the 10th anniversary of 9/11, went back to America and did a show for Five Live. And there is an article, and I think it's in a magazine or a publication called Engineering Today. It's something, it's a professional publication. And it went through absolutely every single one of the conspiracy theories about 9/11.
Yeah.
And from an engineering point of view, debunked Every single one.
They're all rubbish.
So absolutely none of them hold water.
Yeah. If you are a 9/11 conspiracy theorist, shut up. Shut up, you annoying, hideous person.
Okay. Now, that was all Peggy in Glasgow's fault. Thank you, Peggy. Jean in Austin. Which film is the most misunderstood? Most fans of Fight Club seem to have missed the point quite hard. Also, people who say red-pilled, a phrase co-opted from The Matrix
exactly.
by dummies and bad faith actors to mean something completely different.
Completely different.
Indeed, the opposite of the Wachowskis' intention.
Yeah.
So Which film is the most misunderstood?
Well, I'm sorry, but it's the obvious answer. The Exorcist, which is not a film about demonic possession. I mean, it is a film about demonic possession, but it's not a devilish film. I remember famously Blatty saying that Billy Graham had said there is an evil embodied in the celluloid of the film itself, that somehow when the film passes through the projector is unleashed. There is a power in that film, but it's not. Bill was a fairly devout Catholic. The whole purpose of that film is it's not to make you believe in devils, it's to make you believe in God. And I say that, incidentally, as somebody whose, you know, faith has failed spectacularly, but still thinks that that movie does. When you watch that movie, you come out of it not believing in devils, but believing in God.
Dave Brickley, Simon recently asked for a short submission. It's correct. So I will get straight to it, but just don't send me two pages of A4 and then the question at the end. Is it real cinema if it isn't tiered seating?
Here's an interesting answer to that question, which I hadn't heard
before. We'll be the judge of that.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Corner House Cinema in Manchester, which is now closed and has now been placed by Home, which is in a slightly different location. When Corner House first opened, there was the new building. And then as Screen One, they took over a cinema that had previously functioned as, in its latter years, as a porn cinema, sex cinema. And one of the problems that they had with it was that it didn't have tiered seating, because in porn cinemas, it turns out nobody wants to be raised up above the people in front of them. In fact, you know, one of the things about the Prince Charles cinema, it's actually got, you know, the opposite of tiered. The seats in the Prince Charles go down.
Right.
So when you're watching Caligula from row J, you're actually lower down than the people ahead of you, which is really, really bizarre. But I think it's still,
open-air cinema very rarely has, you know, or drive-in cinema, you're all on the level.
Yeah, you're all completely on the level.
Elevated.
Yes, but it is an interesting case. In France, in the turn of the turn of the previous century, one of the things that they pioneered was they were terrified about the idea of people being in dark spaces, all pushed together, and, you know, immorality would happen. So they invented this thing called daylight cinema, in which you would sit all in untiered seating, okay, and there would be, the light would be on, but the film would be projected up above you in a darkened space so that you were lit up so that they could see that you weren't, you know,
I mean,
fondling and a flirting.
The real answer is, well, what else is it? Because, you know, if you go and watch a play, it's theatre. If you're watching someone doing a drama, that's theatre. If you go and watch a movie being projected on a screen, it's cinema.
But the point I was making was, those films that were playing in the glamour cinema as it was before it was Corner House One, are they cinema? Well, yeah, of course they are. I mean, they happen to be porn cinema, but they're cinema.
Dave Prescott, I'm trying to source a film. Oh, here we go. I saw a few years ago, but due to failing memory, can only remember a basic storyline. Here it is. Two chaps work for a company that clears houses of spirits. One of them lives in an upturned boat in the middle of a moor. They get involved with a widow and her daughter. The daughter doesn't talk and has built a shrine to her late father. They cannot clear his spirit because there is a ley line passing through the garden. This is driving me nuts. It was a really enchanting film. Any help would be greatly appreciated. This is where we set up a queue, and if you've got an A, then that would be great, because we're not going to come
on. And I'm
that.
Not getting involved.
Evan, obviously, in Harlem. What are you convinced people are just pretending to hate?
Ooh.
So this is the most kind of, oh, hang on, let me think about it, question that we have this week. Evan, what are you convinced people are just pretending to hate? I will start the ball rolling by saying avocados, because no one can truly hate an avocado.
I hate avocados.
There you go. You see, but what I'm saying is, I'm not convinced by your hatred. I'm saying that you just kind of dislike them, but you say you hate them, you don't.
No, I would take that back. I wouldn't say I hate avocados.
You just said I hate avocados.
No, I'm correcting myself. I wouldn't say I hate avocados. I don't like avocados. I don't like the texture. I like guacamole, but that doesn't have the same texture.
I hate anchovies.
Oh, I love anchovies. Do you hate anchovies?
Yes, disgusting.
Okay, but the thing is, I believe that you do, because I know people, if you don't like anchovies, because they're so powerfully anchovy-ish, it's impossible to not. Like, do you know what I think people don't really hate? You know what people, so the question is,
it's not going to be a Trumpian answer, is it?
Well, not specifically, but it's...
But it'll get there within a 30 seconds.
When people say, they hate the suppression of free speech, but they don't.
Oh, right, it's an Elon Musk point. Okay. Yeah, fair enough. Also, let me just throw this one in. climate change.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, because people say they hate climate change and then get in there.
But actually, I still want to vote for growth. Thank you very much. I don't know. Anyway, I'm just throwing that in.
That's interesting.
That's a very long question.
Yeah. And I would also say that, you know, the right-wing Christian nutballs who say they hate, you know, evil and the devil whilst worshipping evil and the devil.
Dear Crab and Poppy, says James, what are the things you're really glad you're never going to have to learn or do? Again, very, very, well, you never know.
No.
You never know where things, you know, life is full of unexpected
changes. Is she leaving me? No, I mean, I'm genuinely relieved that I never had to go. I mean, now, because nowadays, obviously, that is how people meet online. And I would hate the idea of having to learn all that.
I was thinking of double declutch.
Oh, I can double declutch.
Yeah, but I'm glad I can't, and I'm glad that I don't have to, because it sounds very, very difficult.
No, it's not. It's just to do with it's just a two-step thing. It's very simple. You just going through N. That's all.
Also, killing and skinning a wild boar. Would you skin a wild boar? Would you just kill a wild boar and then eat it?
I'm really glad I didn't have to learn any economics beyond my economics A level. Which at the end of the economics A level, the 2 years, they told us, incidentally, everything we've taught you is now considered to be wrong. If you want to know about what's actually going on, you have to study it. And I thought, great, I'm very glad never to have to do that. I still have nightmares about doing my economics A-level.
I've never had to learn how to defend my family against the zombie apocalypse.
Although your family apparently have discussed this at great length.
Well, the reason he's in Copenhagen, I think, is
that's the place that he will survive the zombie apocalypse.
I think that's probably right.
I'm never having to learn the violin.
Correspondence at comanmail.com for your questions and answers. Joel in Leicester. Dear lady in the van and that bloke off Top of the Pops. This email is probably incoherent as I had no intention of emailing it in and I'm still in a state of shock. Right before bed, I watched one of the scariest films I've ever seen.
Okay.
The Borderlands. Upon completion, I instantly scrambled to YouTube to see what Mark thought of it.
And?
He gives a solid review as always, but I just wondered if the church could grant him permission to share his feelings on the spoilers and most importantly, the ending of the film. It did come out in 2009. Anyway, so I didn't see that one. So.
Yeah, I definitely reviewed it and I definitely remember. I thought my review was quite clear. I think it was because what spoilers? I mean, it's just that there is a section of it, a large section, which takes place underground. And I was sort of deep. And then it's running around. And then there are things in the running around section that you find out that that's what's going on. But I thought it was solid. I thought it was, you know.
After Simon's less, who's this? This is Phil Morgan in Fareham. After Simon's less than positive opinion of my favourite songs that make me cry, hello to David Soul. How much control do you both have over your radio show playlists? Do you play songs that you don't like, hello Roxette? And do you ever play a song live on the show without hearing it first? Down with, up with, and hello to, says Phil.
Can I just say, just apropos of the previous email, I was just checking that I wasn't misremembering. I am remembering correctly that James Moran, who's a brilliant writer, worked on Borderlands. And I mean, it's genuinely scary and claustrophobic. Sorry. No,
do you play songs you don't like? To which the answer has to be yes, because it's not about the songs that
you like. It's the songs that other people...
The whole point is to come up with 3 hours of music on a daily basis, which... a lot of people will like, and they'll hear their favourite songs. And of course, there'll be one or two that you don't like. Of course, there'll be one or two that you like. That's not the point.
No.
The point is to come up with a playlist that everybody else likes.
Yes.
Do you ever play a song live on the show without hearing it first? No.
Because you don't know what might be in it.
Yeah, that's right. But also, because I play oldies, so therefore I've heard all of them before.
I remember once when I was reviewing Oil City Confidential, and I said, let's hear a bit of Dr. Feelgood. And we said, what do you got? I said, oh, I don't know, just play, you know, Roxette or something like that. And as it started playing, you said to me, is there any swearing in it? And I suddenly thought, oh, I haven't done a check. Ah, I didn't think there is, but you know. But
you just never know.
Yeah.
Tom in Birmingham, as a Heritage listener since the days when your broadcast would be played in a car with 4 gears and a manual choke, I have noticed an annoying repetition of films being released year on year that share the same name whilst being completely unrelated. These tend to be simple one-word titles that allow you to quickly make an assumption of what the movie is going to be about. Calling a movie Assassin is a good example, or Extraction, although at least Extraction has a sequel, which should really have been called Extra Action. My question to your bad selves, is there any film title that comes up time and time again that you think should be retired? For me, I don't want to see any more films called The Host. I fear the more that get released, the lower down the pile, the Bong Joon-ho masterpiece gets pushed. Any titles that you just want to get rid of altogether?
Well, I don't know what titles get used over. I mean, there are sort of, certainly... There was in the great scheme of erotic thrillers, there was, because the way the erotic thrillers work is it's two words. So, you know, night rhythms, carnal attractions, fatal investment. Benevolent instinct. You know what I mean? It didn't matter what it was. It was just, you had to just put two things together and they didn't mean anything at all.
Elevated seating.
Yes, there could absolutely have been a straight-to-video erotic thriller called Elevated Seating, no doubt shot by Wally Pfister. But I can't think, I mean, outside of Host, because whenever you talk about Host or The Host, you have to go, not that one, the other one. I also wish that they would stop having movies that had the word exorcist in the title, whether it's the forthcoming, the new Exorcist, because it's just leave it alone, all right?
Amy and Nikki in Belfast. In fact, that's what they used to say in the porn cinemas. Amy and Nikki in Belfast. My friends and I were discussing names you'd never give a baby these days. Mm-hmm. And you came up with some prime examples of this. Obviously, you'd never call a baby Mark or Simon in 2023. No. What other names would you never give a baby? We came up with Brian, Barbara, Susan, Linda, Stephen, Pauline, Linda. Barry, Margaret, Roger, Alan, Anne, Bruce, Malcolm. This is ludicrous. Joyce, Janet, Carol, and of course, Karen.
What's wrong with Linda?
What's wrong with most of those names, to be perfectly honest? A friend of mine did have a conversation with a registrar whilst registering their own baby and said to the registrar, are there any names that you've refused? Because in the UK, that doesn't really happen very much. It does in France. There's a very prescriptive approach to naming babies. And this registrar said, yes, I have turned down two people who wanted to name their child. One, Satan, and the other was Anal. I just mentioned that. He said, no, you can't. On both counts, you can't. Do that.
Well,
you're going to think for fair enough reasons. I think that's a good.
I don't get them. Could you just read me that list again?
Brian, Barbara, Susan, Linda, Stephen, Pauline, Barry, Margaret, Roger. But the whole thing is these names come around again. A name might be out of fashion one time, and then it comes back, and everyone loves it.
So is the thing that those are not fashionable names now?
You'd never know. But they also spoil their case by saying you never call a baby Mark or Simon, and I think that's
no. But that's okay. That's a joke. But the thing is, what Brian has put? What's wrong with that? What's wrong with Linda? What's wrong? I don't get what's.
I was told, I probably told you this before, but when my sister was born, my sister is called Sarah. Apparently, my grandmother, my father's mother, said, but that's a servant's name.
What?
Right. So, therefore.
Wowza.
I'm just saying Sarah is like a classic biblical name. So I'm thinking, okay, that's like a really strange thing. So all these lists about names you can't call your kids.
I mean, I suppose, I don't know this to be true, but I suppose there can't be many kids called Adolf.
No, that's okay. I think that's fair. That's fair enough. Yes, I would think. Let's put that list.
Although I'm sure that the Adolphus and the sort of the various versions of that in other things, but I'm sure that there cannot be that many children called Adolf.
I think that's fair enough. Although
maybe I'm completely wrong.
When I did, if I may be permitted, when I did a lot of school visits, when the Itch books came out, I went did a lot of talks at schools, and then you meet the kids afterwards and you talk to them. And then if they buy a book, you sign a book for them. And there was I'm sure I've mentioned this before. Anyway, there was a girl who was about 9 or 10. She was British Indian. And her first name was Swastika.
Right, yes, because of course it means a different, it's it means a peace
something,
sign, isn't it?
It's a peace sign for Hindus. And thinking, okay, there's an issue there, which is, I think if you want to reinvent that and reclaim it, call yourself that. Don't give it to a kid. So, I mean, we're narrowing it down very much.
I know.
Stupid things to call your kids. But anyway, that was an eyebrow-raising moment and a hand-on-hip moment.
And of course, because having now said it, I'm thinking, well, actually, I bet you that there are many, I'm sure that I, in fact, probably know of names of Adolf having been named, you know, in the post-World War II period in which, so I don't know, maybe that's just a stupid prejudice on my part. I don't know.
Dear Leonardo and Raphael, says Louis of Art Historians Arch, who's your favourite painter?
Ooh. I can tell you.
Well, go on, as that's the point of the Q and the A.
Okay, so what I know about painting would not fill the back of a postage stamp.
Me too.
Okay. I genuinely know nothing.
So this is an ignorant opinion.
Tom Rickman is my favorite painter.
Never heard of him.
Cornish artist whose paintings genuinely take my breath away.
Okay. I will look him up and I'll buy one.
Just his paintings are absolutely,
Tom Rickman.
Tom Rickman.
Is he still with us?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Hello, Tom.
Hello, Tom.
I would go for, boringly, Rembrandt, because somewhere in my house, there's a Rembrandt. Still lost, still looking, no hope so far. But obviously, genius. And Edward Hopper, I've always
liked. Oh, that's a good choice.
And Van Gogh.
Okay.
Van Gogh. Van Gogh. All of them.
Magritte's Empire of Light, for obvious reasons.
Okay. Louis, I hope that's okay for you. Let's just see what we can do here. Paul Cassidy. Mark and Simon, my question is about the future of cinema. So this had better be the end, I think.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on the launch of Apple's new Vision Pro device?
I don't know what it is.
It's like a goggles set in which you put them on and you see everything.
What do you mean?
What do they call them?
Hello?
What do they call those things? I forgot the name. The VR headsets.
Virtual reality.
There you go, VR headsets.
Okay,
So Apple have come up with a new very, very, it's very expensive, like really high-end, $2,500, that kind of thing. It's not out yet, but the reviews have been very good.
Okay.
And apparently, if you see everything that you see, if you watch a movie on these, everything is like IMAX. So everything is astonishing. Anyway.
So it's like being in an IMAX cinema, but in your front room?
Yes, although they're not I haven't worn a headset, but my understanding is they're concentrating more on it being useful as like an office. So like keyboards and everything all appear in front of you and you're using them virtually. Anyway.
Wow. Okay.
This is Apple's new Vision Pro device. From seeing some of the early promotional material and the thoughts of tech analysts, there's a suggestion that it could be a cinema killer. With the extensive streaming options now, the pandemic, this Apple device and competitive devices, it feels like physically going to the cinema will only continue to decline, which in my opinion is sad. When I think of the films that really resonated with me, I associate them with the cinema I saw them in, who I went to see that film with, the whole experience of the before, during, and after. It feels like while we are making progress in terms of technology and innovation, we are actually going backwards in terms of our meaningful, memorable social experiences. There are so many exclusive to Netflix films that I believe would have been so much more enjoyable in cinema. From Paul Cassidy. Now, there's a familiarity to this conversation, and it is true. If you want to, comedies are best seen
with other people. Yeah.
Go see them with other people. You can laugh on your own, of course you can. So there are some movies which are best experienced communally, but it's hard for us to give an opinion on this as a cinema killer because we ain't tried them. But there's a familiarity to Paul's point.
Okay, so what I would say is this. I'm about to turn 60. I don't think that, in my lifetime, I don't know how long my lifetime is, but my feeling is that cinema is the medium that I grew up with, and I'm too wedded to it to actually be able to make any practical decision about what the next generation will do. I have lived most of my life amid stories of the demise of cinema is happening, television and then video, and it hasn't happened yet. I honestly don't know. I haven't tried this thing and I don't know. But I do know that the people who do know is not us. I think that,
I can imagine that, and again, neither of us have tried these things, that it may well be better than watching something in your house. It may well be if you're on your treadmill or your cycle, if you've got a pair of these things, that'll be better than watching it off your phone. Mm-hmm. But will it be better than going to a cinema with your friends, maybe 10 friends or six of them, maybe an after office thing, and you all gasp at the same time or you all laugh at the same gag? It can never do that.
The only thing I'd say is that I remember I had an experience once with Child 2 who was doing online video games. And in your case, Child 3, it has an online community of gamers,
Dungeons and Dragons, all of that.
What they're doing when they're in separate places is communal. They're meeting and they have friendships and, they might meet in the real world, but those friendships can take place completely at a distance. I don't know. I honestly don't know, because I remember once saying to Child 3, you know, isn't there something in Syria? He said, no, I mean, I've got, you know, the friends play these games. They just happen to not be in the same physical place. So I don't know what the answer is. What I do know is that I have been marinated in cinema for too long for my brain to be able to do the leap through the hole to tell you about the next lot.
Plus also, I mean, obviously this relies on cinemas being attractive places to go to. In the same ways that, you know, can I have a beer at home? Yes. Can I go to a pub and have a beer? Yes. And it's like more fun in a pub.
In my case, the answer is no.
What?
I've given up beer.
Have you? Yeah. Well, even on the days that you can eat food?
Well, it's the, you know, the thing is, I love beer. I just love beer, you know.
So you stop beer altogether?
I stop beer altogether.
Champagne is apparently better on the calories front.
No, I know, I hear that, but you know, I've stopped. I mean, I don't think I've given it up permanently. I've just for the purposes of, you know, just right at the moment. And I, you know, so to be honest, right now, the idea of just having a beer under any circumstances.
So you're still going through the grieving process. It sounds like it. Okay, here's one. Okay,
I'm in recovery.
One final question, from D. I am writing to you from Switzerland to report on a cultural vestige of the cinema-going experience, which kind of flows
nicely.
I feel would not only be beneficial for moviegoers, but also for cinemas if it was to return. I'm speaking, of course, of the intermission. Ever since I was little, I assumed that it was normal to have a break in the middle of the cinema-going experience. It was a welcome breather from the action. You could stock up on ice cream, sweets, or popcorn. Most importantly, relieve your bladder if the movie was running too long. The cinema break also served as a welcome plotting ground to discuss our opinions of the film thus far and exchange theories about where the narrative would be headed next. Honestly, I cherish intermissions for a lot of different reasons. Sadly, even here in Switzerland, the intermission is starting to die out. I'm not sure, even here in Switzerland. Anyway, since foreign cinema companies such as Pathé from France have taken root here and now show movies without breaks, even local cinemas are now resorting to intermission-less movie showings to keep up with the competition.
The Wes Anderson film has the worst of all possible things, a card which says intermission optional. So it just reminds you that there might have been an intermission and then it carries on.
Okay. So I mean, I think the intermission is...
It's gone. You can't, the problem is you can't do it in multiple screen cinemas. That's the problem. You can do it in a big cinema that's showing one film. Once you get to multiple screens, speak to anyone who ever run a cinema, you can't do it.
Also, I wonder if some people would take it as a chance to leave.
Well, that's fine. From the cinema point of view, it's like you've done your thing. But it's, of course, if you are, you know, well, there are many reasons why you can't do it in multi-screen cinemas, but you can't do it in multi-screen cinemas.
Thank you very much for all your questions and your schmestions. If you'd like to send them, please, to whether it's about cinema or whether it's about other stuff, you know, we'll have a go.
We'll have a go.
If we can.
The best we can say is we'll have a go.
Correspondence@kermanandmayo.com.
Spell it how you like.